This is WQA Radio, a podcast from the Water Quality Association, the leading voice of the water treatment industry. And hello, I'm your host, Wes Bleed.
You create standards so that consumers can come to depend upon the trade association to ensure that the right types of products are tested, that they're out there, that they're safe, that they're good, that they're positive, all consistent with the antitrust policies.
That's Mike Sennett, WQA's chief legal officer, talking about WQA's antitrust policy. And welcome to the WQA podcast, the weekly podcast from the Water Quality Association, the leading voice of the water treatment industry, where we promote better water quality around the world. We appreciate you joining us. If it's your first time, welcome. We're glad you're here. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a show. And that is the magic of podcasting, by the way. Do note that we are featuring these podcasts on our WQA YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/@Water Quality Association videos. I think you'll like it. In this episode, we are going to dive into WQA's antitrust policy in a conversation with WQA Chief Legal Officer Mike Sennett. We'll define what antitrust means, how it applies to associations like WQA. What are some of the practical implications of the policy, such as meetings and even informal conversations, and why is an important benefit of being a member of the Water Quality Association? So, on to my conversation with Mike Sennett on the WQA podcast. And welcome to the WQA Radio podcast, where we talk with water treatment experts, we talk with staff and members from the water community, and we talk about all kinds of topics. And in this one, fascinating topic, the WQA antitrust policy. Now, hold on if you're ready to check out. This is important for a number of reasons. It's important to members. It's important to the industry. It's important to consumers. And I want to just take some time to talk about it with WQA's Chief Legal Officer, Mike Sennett. Mike, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Boy, thanks so much, Wes, for having me. Really looking forward to this.
Yeah, and did I overstate that this is important?
It's critical. It's critical for the association and also very critical for all of its members.
Yeah. So let's in general talk about antitrust. I don't know, again, from a member standpoint, maybe they think antitrust is about being on the board. Maybe it's about, people who have officer positions and things like that. But that's not the case at all. It really applies to everybody who's a member. So I want to just start with at the beginning and have you, Mike, explain to us what is antitrust.
Sure, Wes. And antitrust is really an economics concept of industrial organization. And what it does is it promotes competition in the marketplace. It protects competition. The statute was first passed in 1890, several amendments since then. But for the most part, it ensures that all of those in a market, whether WQA members or not, compete. And they compete with each other to produce the best possible products, great technology advances, and lowest prices. So its end game is the consumer welfare. But what it does do for the marketplace is that it promotes competition. And that's what drives so much of what we do in a free market. And the United States and much of the world does operate within a free market.
I once heard it described that the antitrust is anything that goes against the public's trust. Does that make sense?
It really is an enforcement mechanism that's designed to protect the public common weal, the public's trust, in the fact that they are getting what they're getting through the process of people producing the best products through competition. And that's where it works best. And there's just so many places that it touches our lives in virtually everything that we do.
Now, you have been in the legal profession for many years and working not only with Water Quality Association, but with other organizations as well. Can you explain or maybe give an example of how you've seen this played out in the marketplace?
You know, absolutely. And that's actually what I practiced when I practiced in private practice for so many years. It was in the field of antitrust. So we would see it day in and day out. In many respects, it is the protection for us. It's what allows products and services to be delivered efficiently and cost effectively. I've seen it actually kind of blow up in associations' faces when they don't have an antitrust policy. Because what happens is the members themselves get together, they engage in conduct that is anti-competitive, anti-trust, if you will. And that, you know, that may be fixing prices, agreeing not to compete, agreeing not to call on certain customers, agreeing that they will not produce a certain number of products so their prices increase. And those sorts of situations end up, you know, unfortunately and candidly becoming criminal, not only for the companies involved, the members of the trade association, but for the individuals that engage in it within those companies, as well as the trade association. And our responsibility, as we think about this, Wes, really is to protect not only the trade association, meaning WQA, but also to have an antitrust compliance policy that protects its members, that ensures that they appreciate that they will always compete with each other, notwithstanding positive trade association values, that they will never fix prices, never engage in boycotts, never engage in customer division, never engage in conduct that otherwise is violative of the notions of free markets.
Well, when somebody hears you describe that, and then they know from just reading the news on a daily basis, when we hear about OPEC and, you know, cartels and things like that, why do they exist, or how are they allowed to exist and, in a sense, set either prices or quotas or, you know, production levels and things like that? How does that work?
You know, hugely interesting question. And I actually spent quite a bit of time with OPEC-type issues. Governments themselves can get together, and that's the function of OPEC. It's a governmental monopoly. It says what we can do as governments, you cannot do privately. So this is not the oil industry, oil companies getting together and agreeing. They would all go to jail if they did. And they would all be out of business. But instead, it's the governments recognizing that anti-competitive conduct can result in higher prices and greater returns for the governments themselves. So they're taking a limited production, which is oil output, and they are agreeing that they will limit production to increase price to all of us. And at the end of the day, what happens? At the end of the day, with something like OPEC, we pay more and we get less. And the exploitation of that has created enormous wealth, but it's governmental wealth. And the only thing that protects OPEC today is the fact that these are sovereign governments engaging in that conduct.
Yeah, a lot of questions about this come to mind, and I find it fascinating. And Mike, you were giving a presentation to staff at WQA, and I came up to you afterward and I said, hey, this is a great topic. We need to make a podcast out of this because our members need to be hearing what underscores and supports and what is the foundation of why we have an antitrust policy. So I'm glad you're getting into this. But when it comes to trade associations and this, you know, trying to make sure that we don't have anti-competitive behavior and all of those kinds of things, why would member companies get together and have these kinds of conversations? I mean, aren't we all competitive by nature? And aren't we all trying to compete with the other person, the other company, and get our fair share of business?
You know, we usually are, Wes, and that's the model that the antitrust laws are based upon. But think back to what we just discussed a moment ago on OPEC. What if privately people could get together, and raise price or allocate customers. You will call on customer A, I'll call on customer B, and we will overcharge those customers. And we'll both make a good deal more money. We don't have to invest in research and development. We don't have to improve our products. We don't have to do anything that is in the consumer's interest. We'll just do what's in our own interest. And there's a, you know, and I go through a comprehensive amount of economic analysis that I learned in graduate school over all this sort of thing. But what it really is all about when they get together like that is creating a private cartel. And candidly, if I went back to all the major Supreme Court antitrust cases over, you know, the last 140 years or whatever we're dealing with now, and think this stuff through, so many of them involve trade associations, because trade associations are, by their nature, a gathering in of competitors. And if they can agree and they can enforce the rules among themselves, everyone stands to make, on the short term, a good deal more money.
All right, so we're kind of getting into the whole nuts and bolts now of WQA and its antitrust policy. Can you boil it down? What is our antitrust policy state?
Sure. Our antitrust policy really outlaws any of the anti-competitive conduct that we've been discussing here, and really drives at the one underlying benefit of a competitive marketplace. And that is, what does it do for consumers? And, you know, when I teach this, whether in law school or even within WQA or out to our members, I say, ask yourself at the end of the day, is what you're thinking about doing, what you're doing as a business person, going to benefit your consumers? And it really does go back to that maxim. The customer is right. The customer is always right. And so we have this policy in place to protect the association, of course, but more importantly, to reinforce with members that competition is a way of life. And that as you think about things, think about competing constantly for the common good. And that's why WQA gets together, is the code of ethics also embraces the antitrust policy, and the antitrust policy embraces the code of ethics. It says we will do what is best for the consumer, as an industry, as members, and that will be our drive. How do we advance technology? How do we do research and development? How do we, as we go overseas, how do we protect our markets so that they are free, fair, and open?
All right, and this might seem obvious, or it might not, I don't know. So I'm gonna ask it anyway. How does then what WQA does as an association, how is that not violating antitrust? How is that supporting the antitrust policy that we would all like to have in a competitive marketplace?
Because so much of what WQA does, whether it's standards making and its certification enforcement, whether it is within the government relations and all of its undertakings before Congress, et cetera, is all designed to impact, for the good of the industry and the association, the continuing ability to compete and to compete fairly. And that's what product certification is all about. You create standards so that consumers can come to depend upon the trade association to ensure that the right types of products are tested, that they're out there, that they're safe, that they're good, that they're positive, all consistent with the antitrust policies. The same thing with legislative undertakings that we do, whether it's the Healthy H2O Act, or lots and lots of our lobbying on the EPA undertakings, and our education, which is really what we do as a trade association, is educate everything from PFAS, et cetera, always protective, but always protective within the framework of the antitrust laws. Good for the consumers. Good for the consumers to know, to be able to decide what product works. How does it work? And is it being fairly presented? Am I getting value? And is there great science to advance it? All those things can only happen with a sound antitrust policy under, you know, as its underpinning.
Really a great member benefit, isn't it, Mike, to have this policy for our members?
You know, it is a terrific member benefit, because what it also does, and this will happen, you know, our big major members down to our smaller cost-effective dealers that are out there every day. It protects everybody, but for those that come to us and those that sometimes will have either some antitrust history, some antitrust knowledge, they want to make sure that we are consistent with their own antitrust compliance policies, that we are protecting them. Because, you know, in all candor, at the end of the day, if I went back to the many, many, many antitrust cases that have been brought against trade associations and their members, the ones that are most at risk are the members themselves, because they are the ones selling products, and the individuals, meaning those that participate in conduct from those members, they are the ones that end up being targeted. And so our consumer benefit is to say to our members, we are protecting you as well as ourselves as a trade association.
Now, most of our members are familiar with the antitrust policy as it pertains to meetings and conference calls, when we normally say, you know, the antitrust policy is in effect for this meeting and that kind of thing. And it's just a good reminder. But does it apply to informal conversations and that sort of thing? Or is it only in those formal areas?
It's in everything, Wes. Antitrust compliance is critical to and actually applies more often to the informal sessions. I can recall a couple of famous cartel cases that I was involved in, the Archer Daniels Midland one that many people are familiar with. Much of that went on behind the scenes. It went on in over drinks in a bar, in conference rooms, because the trade associations have become so effective, WQA is one, at ensuring that the formal undertakings of the trade association are antitrust compliant, that we do end up with meetings, we do have reminders, we do all of that. So what we try to do when we teach, and what I would ask our members to take away from this podcast, is, yes, we will take care of you there, but you really need to work at it for yourself on the informal one-on-one give and takes, whether on the golf course, in the bar, over dinner, what have you, that you also remember the antitrust laws apply 24/7, absolutely.
Well said. And you know, as I'm listening to this, Mike, it seems to me that if I could put it succinctly, I don't know if I can, but I'll try, that the antitrust policy ultimately benefits the consumer, but by benefiting the consumer, it ultimately comes back around to benefit the member as well. Would that make sense?
Absolutely. So true. The members really do benefit from an educated, well-protected consumer. They'll make intelligent choices to get the best price, to get the best services, and to get their manufacturers and their dealers working toward improvement, product improvement, technology advances. That's what we're all about here.
Mike Sennett, WQA's Chief Legal Officer, joining us on the podcast and talking about the antitrust policy of WQA. So, Mike, how can people, if anybody has a question or whatever, what's the best way to reach out, contact either you or WQA in general, and learn more?
Yeah, I would just work through WQA. This is this session and all that we do are educational. Certainly not legal advice, but it is educational. We do have sessions at convention from time to time that will address this issue. Additional podcasts that you and I have done, Wes, over time that we'll continue to do. And if you have direct questions, just send them on into WQA and we'll take a look at them.
Yeah, the best email is wqa@wqa.org. Again, Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Wes, for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this podcast from the Water Quality Association, the leading voice of the water treatment industry. Learn more about WQA professional certification, product certification, and how you can become a member, all at WQA.org. This is Wes Bleed. So long from the Water Quality Association.